Hi, this is Stephen Laddick.
And I'm Kent McPhail. Welcome to What the M,
the podcast about the mortgage default servicing industry.
What the M is a bi-weekly podcast with new episodes dropping every other Friday. This episode of What the M is brought to you by Guardian Asset Management. Guardian Asset Management is the one-stop shop for lenders, servicers, hedge funds, residential and commercial investors, and government entities that need a full suite of property management solutions under one roof. Hello, listeners, and my co-host, Stephen Laddick. So how are things up in the Keystone State today?
It's always sunny in Philadelphia, you know.
I love it. So, yeah, Steve and I are both getting ready to connect out on the West Coast at the Carrington Charity Golf event. And so anyway, I'll be seeing you and enjoying some dinner with you in a few days.
Looking forward to it. And, just as the cold weather is about to hit this weekend here, we'll be getting out on the West Coast. So
that sounds perfect. Well, tell our guests a little bit about our show today.
Well, sure. We welcome to the show our guest, and we're going to be talking about work from home strategies and benefits and challenges we face in an industry, not just from a banking side, but from a servicer side, a law firm side, the challenges that have been created by working from home, things along that line. And COVID certainly obviously changed the way people work. And work from home is a direct result from that. And it's a good theme, and it's a good thing to be talking about today, how some of the impact on regulatory functions, monitoring, employees, and the like. So we'll jump right into that topic. Kent, why don't you introduce our guest today?
Our guest today attended Arizona State University, where he got a BA in organizational leadership.
Interject. He then attended Pack 2 there.
Go back to. He then attended Texas Tech University, where he received an MBA. He then attended Texas A&M, where he got a Master's of Legal Studies. He has been in the financial services industry for approximately 2 decades, the majority of that in the mortgage servicing space. He spent 11 years at NationStar Mortgage in a variety of positions. He spent around 5 years at Goldman Sachs, and he is now the Senior Vice President of Customer Care and Default Mortgage Servicing at BOK. Please welcome to the show, Michael Merritt.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. It's great to have you here. And by the way, thank you for all you've been doing for the Legal League, too. We really appreciate how you're always at our servicer summits and always an active participant on panels. So thank you for that. As you heard in that intro, we're going to talk a little bit today about work from home. And one of the things we want to talk about is the culture, you know, building a culture if you have all employees working from home. So tell us a little bit about your thoughts on how you build and maintain a work culture when you're in a remote world.
I think what COVID really forced leaders to do is understand what their culture was. I think a lot of companies relied on the atmosphere and the office, that they followed the Google way of splashy paint and ping pong tables and arcade games. And they really built their culture around the surroundings. And that drove a lot of structure of how they built that. But if your employees are working remotely, your culture has to be built on foundational things like how you treat customers, how you treat employees, how you support them through technology and training and things like that. So to me, culture, especially in our org, we're stronger today than we were before COVID, because we really had to be thoughtful and meaningful about how we communicate, how we meet, how we train, how we hire. It's really made us be better and thoughtful about every action that we take, because if they're not in front of you, the actions speak louder. So you've really got to have a good foundation for how you design that culture.
So it sounds like you have to be very deliberate in those processes, and I'm sure that's a big challenge. But let me ask you this, in regard to trying to perpetuate that culture, when you get new employees, do they have like periods of time, or would you suggest they have periods of time that they're working on site as opposed to remote before, in order to instill some of that?
I do. I think the nesting period is very important for a couple of different things. I think it's important to see leadership, see the building. You get a feel for who a company is that way, but you also develop the relationships. I mean, I think, you know, mortgage servicing and financial services at large, is a relationship business. whether it's relationship with your attorney firms that are so critical to your success, or with your leaders and your coworkers. So having that nesting period just to figure out who are the players, who do you go to when you need help, I think that's very important. I also don't think it needs to be a ton of time. I think if you're thoughtful about how you structure that and how you teach that, I think that 90 to 120 days is the sweet spot.
That's interesting. So, and of course, everything in this industry is very data driven, but one of the challenges, I think probably more so for the law firms, because a lot of the services are further out ahead in terms of productivity, but tracking the productivity of the employees that are remote. And what are your thoughts about that? And how do you guys typically handle it?
We are in a data business. We know almost to the second what our employees are doing. We know how many widgets they build. We know how many calls they take, how many customers they talk to. So I think using the ranking reports and the other dashboards that we already had in place, it's forced us to really create a baseline. What do we expect for each level of employee? What is the expected outcome? And what we've seen, through COVID and through our transition back into a more hybrid environment, in every measurable way, our employees are more productive that work from home. They feel more comfortable. They're more productive. And we've actually built in guardrails that if they don't meet those expectations, they do have to come back in the office. And we have a little more hands-on training to try to get them back up to expectation before they can work from home again.
So do you feel like, you know, when they were on site versus not, that there's a greater amount of management time committed to tracking productivity, or about the same, or?
I think in a perfect world, it would be the same. You would look at employees that are working remotely the same way you do in front of the office. But what I've seen and from talking to some of my peers in the industry, they spend more time looking at remote employees. And they ignore some of the inefficiencies of in-office work. They ignore kind of the water cooler talk. Again, anyone that's walked through a large shop around March Madness, there's a definite drop in productivity.
Me included on that one.
Their internet up, track.
Yeah, right. I have no idea what you're talking about.
That's right. Everyone's looking at their bracket. Yeah,
I was done by about 2 o'clock on day one last year. So.
Day one and day two are the best days in sports, in my opinion, right? It's where all the upsets happen. It's where all the madness happens. But I think, and it's something that anyone that asks my opinion, I always caution them, don't be more restrictive on what you're looking at remotely. I think create a standard that makes sense for you. What should you monitor? And figure out ways to do it for your employees in front of your office versus, you know, in their living room or in their office at home. I just think, you know, productivity is so important. So manage it consistently. And what you'll see is when employees are comfortable, they're usually more productive. And the more flexibility you can build in, the more bought in they're going to be to the culture. They're going to be more bought in to you as a leader, and you'll get way better output.
Well, speaking of that, let's talk a little bit about the impact on talent. One of the things that work from home, it provides such a wider geographic possibility for employees. You know, I don't necessarily have to have an employee living within 15, 20, 30 minutes of my office. I can have a very talented person in another state if I really wanted to. So what have you found with regard to, by offering the work from home option, how has it impacted your hiring, training? Retention is a very important thing in this industry, retaining key employees. How has that been impacted?
We're lucky. One of our main offices is in Dallas, which is, you know, right now probably the prominent hub of mortgage servicing. So we have a great talent pool, but the ability to interview someone from anywhere in the U.S. is certainly a plus. You know, there are companies, and through the consolidation of the default industry, there's great employees that may not be in your geographic area that this lets you interview them, and it lets them be, you know, a seamless member, and you can add, you know, years of experience that you just wouldn't have an opportunity to. So I think that's helped for sure for a lot of places. But, you know, on the retention and the recruitment, I just think, you know, whether you're hybrid or you're fully remote, like some companies have chosen to do, I really think that level of flexibility is almost like table stakes. If you don't have that as an option, or even as a conversation point, people just aren't going to look at you. And it creates a target on your back if you're 5 days a week in the office right now, that companies are going to come pick your talent. So retention, it's important. I think recruitment, it's important. And like you said, broadening that footprint of where your talent pool is. I just think everyone needs talent, and
Let
the
me
bigger the
follow up
pool, the
with that. The
better.
one concern, and I've seen it from our perspective too, about newer employees with less experience. I mean, how do you help build the culture with them, and how do they learn if they're going to start out and just be remote from the onset? How does a younger employee gain the experience? Because I know from a legal standpoint, I gained so much by following the two senior lawyers around and going to court with them and learning how they manage a file and how they prepared for court, that would be lost if I was sitting at home the whole time.
That's a great question, Steve. I think that's the biggest concern on remote environments is that osmosis learning. I think, starting my career in the call center, a huge amount of the things that I learned were just hearing people around me. How do you answer escalated calls? How do you answer those tough questions? So that is a concern. What we've tried to do is just utilize technology. During that nesting period, we introduce them to the supervisors. We introduce them to the leads. We have tenured people rotate in, so they get time with each of those different people that they would be leaning on, and then we've created a lot of Teams chats. So it's not just one senior person that's in there; it's the whole group of them. So we go in and actually have kind of a live question. Hey, they're asking this question. I haven't really heard it before. How do I answer this? And as a leadership team, that's a gold mine for us. We go back in and keep those questions, and we just look and see what was the upfront training not sufficient for? It's a lessons learned kind of feedback loop. So if we're getting the same questions, we know we need to enhance the onboarding training on that. Or maybe it's an FAQ that we, it's a living, breathing document that we keep it pinned. Here's the most common questions you're asking. So it's really just made us be more thoughtful about what resources do we give to employees. Are we training enough up front? But the relationship part of that, it's hard to replace that. So we're trying to just utilize technology, and we've had really great success with those team chats.
Yeah, I think one of the challenges that we have, and along the lines of what you were saying, Steve, as it relates to, younger attorneys, it's, the things that you learn in law school. You read the rules of civil procedure. Somebody doesn't answer in X days, you file a default judgment, bam, 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 bam. When the reality of where I practice is, when someone doesn't answer, you're picking up the phone, you're trying to coddle them into answering because the judges would be more upset with us for defaulting some local lawyer. And so those are the sort of like, where's the water cooler, what you do with this judge, don't do. But there's just got to be a trade-off because, I mean, it's a new world post-COVID and you have to be flexible. So what about regulatory challenges? Because, one of the things that, we're in multiple states and we're have brick and mortar in those states. From a regulatory standpoint, brick and mortar standpoint, how do you feel that relates to the work from home strategies?
Sure. I think especially for non-bank regulated entities that have to fall back on some state regulations, I think in general, the federal level and at the state level, they relaxed those requirements during COVID because they had to. There just were limitations in certain jurisdictions on what you could do. But as we move further back to whatever the new normal is, I think we need to really look at that as an industry and partner with the regulators to show that just because someone's not in my office doesn't mean it's the Wild West. It's still controlled. It's still the mitigations are still in place. We still do the same level of expectation for remote employees. So, I hope that over the next year, we really start to see some softening of some of those brick and mortar requirements. And that goes, for firms, the firm requirements that are out there, as well as the servicer. I hope to see that as a brave frontier that we can work with the regulators to start
Love to
softening
hear
that.
that. But along with like bricks and mortar, you sometimes have an added layer of security and monitoring of employees. Now, in the banking industry and in the legal industry, every day the amount of information, private borrower information that's processing through this place, the amount of privileged legal documents that are processing through this place. I mean, on your end, how do you deal with that information security and data security with employees being remote? What kind of requirements do you put in place?
The biggest single hurdle we have, I think, is the additional risk from an InfoSec perspective. You know, I think you look at the way it was before, where you have your physical protections that are in place. You have badge access and all the things you love showing when people come on site, right? Look at all these controls. I think when you look at the access points that opens up to being remote, you know, every employee's Wi-Fi now becomes a way you can get in. Every employee that, you know, the Internet of Things, where they have refrigerators and Alexas and all these different things that can potentially be a risk. You know, I think awareness and training is critical. I think that having a infrastructure of InfoSec controls in place at the bank are very important. You need to have proper firewalls. You need to have proper patching and updating cadences in place that you are meticulous about. And you need to make sure that however the employees are accessing your network is consistent. So, you know, we have laptops that employees use that have a lot of controls built into them. But some people use a bring your own device type strategy. So you've got to make sure that they have settings on their home PC. You don't want to open yourself up to that. So I think training and awareness is critical, but that's been something that's been trending. That's not new. You know, InfoSec has been a top two or three risk for the industry for a decade now. And this has just really highlighted how important it is. You know, I think the one of the things that we've really focused on is being in an area that is secure.
I was just going to ask you about that. I mean, do you incorporate in your policies things like that you have to be at a designated place in your house, or Can they be at the beach on Fridays working remote? I mean, you know, can you be sitting out in public? What kind of specific policy should be in place to cover those?
Sure. So anyone that sets up for remote work in our company actually has to take a training. And one of the aspects of that training is physical security. So we recommend that they do have a dedicated place. And, you know, we're not quite as formal about that, you know, hey, you can't go to mom's house and work there over the weekend. We try to be flexible where we can be. We just want awareness. Be smart. Be on a secure network. Don't log on to anything that doesn't require a password. And again, whether that's at your mom's house or that's at your house, you know, do use common sense security for that. We do also have some layers of kind of oversight to that. So if I'm listening and monitoring phone calls and I hear disruptive, you have a lot of noise in the background, we're going to talk to the agent and just say, hey, we're hearing this. It's a quality issue. You know, what is your at home situation? You know, do you have a space? Do we need to talk about different arrangements where maybe you're in office if other people are going to be there? So we try to be, you know, balance the flexibility with quality.
We didn't ask you, but what percentage of workers are remote for you guys?
We're in servicing. Holy we're at like cow. 95% are work from home. In a hybrid way. So we're two days in the office, or 2 days work from home, 3 days in the office. So we get the best of the collaboration time with the flexibility of being work from home a couple of days.
So the 3 days, are they lumped together? So are you talking about Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or do they spread out?
We've evolved. That's a great question. That's one of the most common questions I get, actually. So we came back in office probably earlier than almost anybody else. July of 21, we went full time back in office, and we kind of relished the collaboration. We got back in front of each other. It was really great, but we knew employees wanted flexibility. So we rotated it back and went to a 2-3 model. What we did at first is we had one dedicated collaboration day. So Wednesdays were the days we wanted everyone in office, and everyone else split Monday, Tuesday, or Thursday, Friday. But what we saw from both our supervisors and our agents is they wanted more collaboration time. they wanted to see their full team more than just one day. So we've shifted where all of our teams are Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday in office. So you get triple the collaboration time, and then everyone works from home Monday, Friday. And I know, Monday, Friday is a sticking point for a lot of people. And my stance is you either trust your employees to work from home or you don't. If I trust them to work from home Wednesday, why would I not trust them to work from home Monday? It's still a work day. I still have the same performance expectations. So what does it matter what day they work from home and what day they're in office? What we've seen, the concern is, oh, they're going to be off at the beach and they're going to take extended weekends. What we really see is they actually work through times that they would normally call out. We've seen call outs drop to almost nothing on Monday and Friday. Those are your two most common days people call in. We see almost no occurrence of that anymore since we've done that. The teams work with each other. They feel more plugged in with the company, more plugged in with their supervisors. And, when they have the sniffles, instead of rolling up and saying, I'm not going into the office on Friday, they log in and they're able to have more flexibility on days that are a little bit more meaningful for them. So I'm a huge proponent of be smart
Well,
and be
yeah, you
flexible
used
when
the
you
word
can.
flexibility a few times there. And let me ask you this, like by being flexible, what exactly is a work day anymore? Is it I'll get up and I'll work from 6 to 8 and then I'll go out to the park and then I'll come back from 10 to 1 and by the end of the day I'll have 8 hours in. I mean, so what exactly is a work day and how do you measure, like, to what extent does flexibility go?
I think that's a great question, and that's something that I think we'll grapple with. So I'll give you my opinion, and I'll preface it by saying I'm one of the most pro work from home executives you'll meet. If I am not on the phone with the customer, if I'm not publishing when I'm going to be available, that's a different animal. Those people, unfortunately, they're tied to when the customer knows we're open, right? Your workday is going to be 8 to 5 or 9 to 6 or 7 to 4. We're locked in on those. But if I'm processing a lost mitt file, I don't care. If you're a night owl and you want to work 10 to 7, I don't care. Let your manager know and let me make sure I have support for you when you need it. But if you're tenured and your production's there, I don't care. If you need to go get your kids from 2 to 3 or 2 to 4 and you clock out and you make up that time by working till 6 or 7, I have no concerns as long as you're meeting the expectations. If your quality and your performance is there, I don't care when you do the work. Do the work when you will be most productive. And if that's a 4 10-hour day and we need to look at what that output is and that works with their job role, I support that. If it's more where, again, they work in the morning, they have a huge break to get the kids home from school and settled, and then they work later at night, I'm completely fine with that.
Sound like
Dying
you're.
rarity. Most people are no, you
Well,
need to be
it
an 8 to
depends.
5,
It,
but
and you're right. I
I think
mean,
the
like, there's certain aspects. Like a courthouse here is only open 8:30 to 4. But I can't have lawyers choosing to work at 6 o'clock at night. It's just not going to work. Or whatever. But there are
Right.
aspects of our job that can
And
be
my
flexible. You can be working on a pleading after hours. But there's, that's why we're in this mix
That's
where.
right.
Part of it, you have to be open in here or available 8:30 to 5, depending on a court calendar. So,
And I have people that have to be there to answer, rails and communication back from the attorney. So that team, I have to stagger to make sure someone is there in case there's an escalation that comes in. We've got to be there to support our critical vendors. But I think back one of the selling points on offshoring or nearshoring is that you get a 24-hour work cycle for some off for from off the phone tasks. So why would I not offer that same flexibility to an employee that's on
So
staff with me?
at our firm, the majority of our people are, in-house, but the majority of them also have the capacity to work from home. So where we see benefit is in the scenarios where you have a sick child, where otherwise, if they didn't have that capacity, then, we lose them for the day. It allows them to not use PTO. It allows them to care for their child, and it allows us to keep the ball rolling down the hill, so to speak. So Michael, the last question that we ask all our guests, and I prepped you for this, but anyway, if you had the opportunity to sit down with the 20-year-old version of Michael, what sort of advice would you give that young man?
I love this question. So I'm glad that I had some prep to think about it. I would really give him two pieces of advice. I think the first one is really focus on work-life balance earlier in your career and build those boundaries because it's going to be beneficial for you later. It was a, I think, a rapid change I had to make after I was married and had children that I really went from kind of workaholic to quickly building those boundaries. I'd have loved to have done that a little bit earlier. And use my extended family and my nieces and nephews to help build that habit ahead of actually needing it for my family. The other one is I think appreciate mentors earlier. I have been absolutely blessed in my career to have just amazing mentors. It's why I'm at where I am today. But I would love to have appreciated that earlier in my life. Last year I lost my kind of key mentor in my life. And I just think of the conversations I could have had with him earlier, and really understanding the impact and power that mentors have. I think I would have picked his brain about things earlier, and I'd love to gain kind of more insight, when we were there together.
Excellent.
I think that's great advice. So, Michael, thank you very much for taking the time to be a guest on our podcast. I had the opportunity to meet Mike a couple of weeks ago. He got trapped with me in a taxi, and we got to connecting on books and various things that we like in common, and got to listen to you speak as well. And so, you certainly have a lot of great information on this topic, and it's very gracious of you to
Yeah,
come on the
thanks
show,
again so much, Michael.
Stephen.
Truly appreciate you being here. Look forward to seeing you at some future events.
Yes, I appreciate you both. You guys are always great. I love the voice and ideas you share for our industry. I think it's, the thought leaders in this industry are strong. And I love hearing you guys speak on panels and at events. So
Thank
I
you.
appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Have a great day.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear on our podcast and want to hear some more, please rate, review, and subscribe to What the M on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you want to visit with us on social media, we can be found at What the M Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thank you.